And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this beautiful Saturday morning. To me, it's just a treat to drive this way because some of those high points on the highway. Boy, red sky in morning. I love it. One thing that I discussed with a couple of people this week is just a very, very simple idea. All right, let me give it to you. What if we made just a very simple study of people that seemingly live a long time? They tend to be relatively free of the severe diseases that most Americans are probably very fearful of. I think the other day I told you that the number one disease that costs the most money in the year 2016 was diabetes. But if you said, well, what's the number one cause of death? Well, you could say heart disease. Well, what's number two? You could probably say stroke and cancer. Number three is probably going to be diabetes. And number four, it's going to be related to Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, memory loss, just a lack of an ability for your mind to work sufficiently where your body can do what you want it to do. Anyway, I was telling a individual yesterday that on the island of Okinawa, Japan, they have more people that are age 95 and above that are still self-employed. Either they walk to work to take care of a shop, or they're farmers, or but they're still doing something that's productive, that earns money, or they're generating income. And when I told it to a gentleman yesterday, he said, I don't even know anybody that's 95 that's still around. And I'm going, well, good point. Let alone someone that's still working at age 95. Well, to me, that's kind of an interesting proposition. And, of course, it's easy to try to overthink these things, but how many people do you know that are even age 95 and they're still around? Probably not many. How many are working? Probably not many. Do you know what the word centenarian means? It means referring to someone that's achieved the age of 100 or above. I think the term supercentenarian refers to someone that's 110 and above. A lady yesterday was telling me about the woman that lived next door to this building that we're in. I think that's what she said. And she was 115. That was here in Jacksonville. She was telling me back in the 20s and 30s, they own Love's Lookout. If you've been to Jacksonville, you know about Love's Lookout. If you go to the edge of the, boy, you talk about seeing for a long way off. It's beautiful. Now, back to Okinawa. Do not overthink this. Just take it as fact. If you want to dispute it, that's fine also. But sometimes I just think simple is what works. Because simple information can start the wheels moving in a good direction in your brain, and you might actually pick up on something here. You decide if this is important to you or not. For me, it is important, but we'll find out for you. They have more centenarians, meaning people that are age 100 and above, on the island of Okinawa, Japan, than anywhere else in the world. Can we learn something from that? Is there any message that we can extract, any lesson to be learned? Well, they also happen to have just about the lowest prostate cancer in men, and then in women, they would have the lowest breast cancer. And so what I want to do is switch gears here. I want to look at one element or one nutrient that they're consuming on the island because they're eating the foods that are, you know, the harvest or the bounty from the ocean. It's called iodine. Well, they're averaging about 12 milligrams of iodine a day. Now, is this processed iodine from a chemical laboratory where they're trying to... No, it's just from nature. Now, I did not have a bowl of fish head soup and a seaweed salad this morning. And I wasn't raised on that. So it doesn't even make sense. I mean, let's face it, if when you're 2 years old, your mother says, here's your fish head soup. Well, if that's what your taste buds are used to, if that is what your mother ate while you were in the womb, then you're used to that. That's what your taste bud, that's what your thermostat is set for. But if I lived there, I would learn to like it.
Okay.
Let me read this to you right here. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, is a very common lung illness that makes it difficult for sufferers to breathe. So I'm just guessing there's probably 35 people listening to the program this morning that have COPD, and they are availing themselves to all the breathing treatments and the steroids and the drugs and the chemicals, and they've had their fair share of trouble. And they're following everything their doctor has said. I'm just going to give you a different take on it. The two most common forms of COPD are going to be chronic bronchitis, which is characterized by long-term cough with mucus formation, and emphysema, which is a gradual deterioration of the lungs. According to Jonathan Wright, MD, and I'm going to quote him, if you have chronic bronchitis and or emphysema, or chronic obstructive pulmonary or lung disease, then enter the concept of potassium iodide. Sometimes it's called SSKI for short. Potassium iodine gets into all body secretions. And I realize I'm probably getting into it way too quickly, because I just talked about people on the island of Okinawa consuming iodine. Just consider this. Potassium iodine gets into all body secretions, including often thick and hard to cough up bronchial secretions, which get infected very easily. This week I read an article concerning the top bacteria that health experts are worried about. You know what number two on the list was? Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Well, that means something to me, because a gentleman that called last week, he talked about having a surgery, and guess what he developed? Pseudomonas aeruginosa. So when you have thick mucus secretions in your lungs, what if you have thick mucus secretions in the back of your throat? Or you have chronic sinus problems? Or you have gunky, gooey stuff in your body? Well, friends, that is ripe breeding ground for infections. You tell me, if you have a bunch of snot in your sinuses and nose, is that like a ripe breeding ground for toxic bacteria? Of course it is. Okay. The symptoms of COPD include cough with mucus, shortness of breath that worsens with mild activity. That means if you just try to do something normal, like walk around the mall or go to the store or go to garage sales or do yard work, then guess what you get? You get fatigue, you get to wheeze, you get frequent, you're probably more prone to upper respiratory tract infections. It's important that smokers with this condition stop smoking. I'm reading what Dr. Wright's saying. It's also important to avoid cold air and reduce air pollution in your home. According to Dr. Wright, potassium iodine, or iodide, guess what it does? It loosens mucus secretions remarkably, making them much easier to clear, and it prevents microorganisms from growing easily. Isn't that interesting? I think I'm going to jot that down on a sheet of paper in front of me and say, Roy, take a note here. If you don't want to get sick, if you don't want to have lung infections, maybe a little bit of iodine would be a good idea. What else did you say? Anyway, if you and I were to have no fresh, clean water to drink, and we looked down, we found a pond, and in this pond, of course, I drove by one this morning. Of course, it's just down in the little, dip in the road so I can see it, but there's a beaver pond. I'm not the least bit interested in drinking beaver pond water, are you? No, there's no telling how many disease-causing germs are in that. You know, it's really a game of numbers, isn't it? If you have one parasite enter your body, maybe you can deal with it. It's a little bit different if you have 6 billion. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, Dr. Morgan. I wanted to ask you,
your thoughts on Medicare and all the options available today.
Well, I don't have Medicare, so I wouldn't even know the options. I'm not on Medicare.
Okay.
I mean, but what do you have in mind?
Well, I'm going to be signing up within a couple of months, and it's all the options that are available, all of the various different plans are very confusing, and I just wanted to know what your advice would be.
Well, what is your mindset like right now? Are you a real proactive person?
Yes.
I can tell you the number one user of money and retirement accounts are going to be health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to distract from what you ask, because you're asking a very good question, but my vote is to not get sick.
I'm not sick. I'm
no, no. Right, and that's exactly where I want you to be. I want you to go into this that since I'm about that age where I'm going to need where I'm going to sign up for Medicare, I want to make the best choice in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to say this. I have met so many people over the last 30 years that were overconfident. When I say overconfident, all I'm saying is they felt like that their health problems that they were suffering with were really not that big of a deal, only to have it turn out catastrophically. So for a lot of people, things just never turn out as well as what they kind of hope for. And sometimes this life is fraught with many illnesses at the end of it that they didn't anticipate or think of. And that's one of the reasons why I try to give so much information, because I'm just thinking someone's going to hear about iodine and they're going to find out that people that live on the island of Okinawa live longer than anywhere else on Earth, and they have fewer diseases and cancer, that they're going to be able to connect the dots and figure out for themselves maybe they should consume a little bit of iodine. That's just one example. But I would say also there's a lot of people, they die a lot sooner than what they think they're going to die. And so with that being said, if your mindset is to have an attitude that you're going to take care of yourself and you're going to keep a strong body and mind in good working order, that's going to require a significant investment or resources on your part. But as far as the plans go, no. How many years away am I? I'm 15 years away from my maximum retirement age. I'm not 15 years away. 53. Okay, I'm 12 years out from getting Medicare. I just haven't crossed that bridge yet.
Okay.
So I wish I could be more helpful. I just don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
Well, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
If there was one system in your body, whether we talk about the lungs or the brain or the heart, blood sugar control, digestion, arthritis, is there any weakness that you have right now?
No.
So there's nothing to be improved upon?
No.
Wow. You'll be the first person I've met out of 7 billion that could say that. It's very impressive. So what's your plan?
Well, I have to sign up.
Right.
I have to do something, because if you don't, there are financial penalties later on when you eventually will. So you're trapped. In other words, you have to sign up.
Yes, I understand that.
And I, for the last almost 20 years, I've been with Samaritan Healthcare. I've never had to use them.
Wow. You are in great shape, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I have not done a study on that, but I'm sure that I could if I set my mind to it. I know one day I'll have to cross that, Lord willing, unless the Lord comes again.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish you the best in your studies, but I'm almost positive that there's probably at least 100 billion websites that would probably explain the pros and cons of each and every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes on the Dallas radio stations, on the AM stations, I will hear people that say, we're going to offer a seminar that's going to cover all the different options for Medicare. That way you can make an informed decision. I just have not attended one of those seminars yet, but I love learning, so that'd be easy. But I wish you the very best, and thank you for your phone call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. There is a phone line open, so if you want in, I can just get you right in. Now, this week I have three different people call my office, and I have not met these three people before, but they left their message, and one lady She did a great job of leaving her phone number, except she left out two numbers. I listened to it 10 different times. I could never figure out what the combination was, because two numbers were left out. It was 9035, and the last four numbers, I'm going, well, that's a lot of possibilities. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Hi. My son, I think it's GERD that he has. He has trouble swallowing sometimes when he's eating, and it gets stuck, and he just has to wait until it goes away before he can swallow. Is there something he can do for that?
How old is your son?
36.
The esophagus is the tube that goes from the back of your throat or from your mouth to the back of the throat down to the stomach, and it has to pass through a structure called the hiatus of the diaphragm. It's just an opening in the diaphragm as it carries the contents of the food into the stomach. So if your son were to take a glass of water that was room temperature, meaning it's pretty comfortable, and he swallows it, it may take 1 to 2 seconds for the water to get to his stomach. But if he was swallowing food, let's just say extra dry chicken and extra dry potatoes or something like that, that may take easily 10 seconds for those wave-like contractions in your esophagus to carry the food into the stomach. Now, I'm going to say this, and you're going to have to ask me questions if it doesn't make sense. There's an organ in the digestive tract that happens to be quite large. It's called the liver. Now, in the liver, we have approximately 40 to maybe 55,000 bile ducts. And one of the roles of the bile ducts is to manufacture a substance called bile. And when bile is released from the liver and the gallbladder through the common bile duct into the small intestine, that is one of the most important starting points of events to stimulate proper digestion. But it stimulates what's called peristaltic contractions. These, again, are the wave-like movements that allow food to move along the conveyor belt pretty efficiently. When bile becomes congested, and you build up back pressure because the liver is just swollen with it, you're going to have upward back pressure on your stomach and your esophagus. So instead of food easily moving from your mouth to your stomach, oh no, it causes the esophagus to become more narrowed. See, if you'd called a gastrointestinal surgeon how to correct this, he'd say, oh, it's easy. Let's come in for about $15,000, and I'm going to dilate the esophagus. I'm just going to stretch it out. And you would probably say, oh, that is a great plan. I love that plan. We're going to do a medical procedure where we just go and stretch the heck out of everything in there. But are you the type of person that's quite inquisitive where you might say, well, why is it narrowed to begin with? But if the bile becomes backed up and congested and the gallbladder fails to work efficiently, then you're going to get all this back pressure, and it's going to push upward on the stomach. And it's going to cause, if you say GERD, I'm not going to argue with that. That sounds good to me. But that irritation is going to cause constriction of the esophagus. So what you might say is, well, why is this the case? Well, one possibility is he is consistently eating or consuming something that he shouldn't be consuming. Now, I'm not trying to be negative, but I'm just going to ask a simple question, and you can answer it or not answer it. But does your son drink beer?
Mm-mm.
Does he drink alcohol?
No.
Okay.
I mean, he might on occasion, but not excessively.
Have you ever heard of somebody that's an alcoholic that has a fatty liver where the liver just becomes so clogged full of fat it just can't work right?
Yes.
Well, there's a condition called NASH, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. That's just a fancy term for a fatty liver that has nothing to do with alcohol.
Okay.
And that's technically what's going to happen anytime that we consume more inflammatory producing carbohydrates and what we should. So yesterday a woman presented to me a beverage that they want her mother to consume. The mother's 91 years of age. They're trying to help heal her body, and it didn't take long until I can look at the list of ingredients and guess what the amount of carbohydrates were in this beverage they want to give a 91-year-old woman.
Hi.
45 grams of carbohydrates.
Oh my god.
45. That's like more than a Mountain Dew or Pepsi. Anyway, but I thought to myself, is that really what she needs to take care of a wound that won't heal? I thought to myself, no. What is the number one predictor of an infection that never goes away? It's going to be the total amount of carbohydrates that a person consumes, because what you're doing is you're feeding the infection. You can't both kill it and feed it at the same time, if you ask me. I mean, I've tried that. It just doesn't work. And so for a 35-year-old man that has GERD, I don't know, but I might guess that his liver might be just a little bit clogged up, creating back pressure. Okay. And so you get all these obnoxious acid secretions in the stomach that just kind of boil upward. Does he ever tell you that he has a backwash of acid up his throat?
Yes.
Oh, I am not interested in that. You know what? Can I tell you a free treatment?
Yeah.
It doesn't cost anything. There's a lot of ways to do this, but one technique, and you just have to run them past him and find out what his level of interest is in this. Sometimes all you have to do is just skip supper for about 5 days in a row. So he can wake up and eat breakfast, he can have lunch, but he purposely does not eat supper. Okay. And what that does is it gives the digestive tract a rest in the evening. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I almost think, have you ever taken a grease gun and putting it on a grease joint on a tractor and like squeeze grease into it because you're trying to lubricate it?
No.
Well, you know what my plan is? I cram as much grease into the joints as possible until it's squirting out. Well, that's what he's got. He's got so much bile squirting out of his liver and gallbladder, it's got no place to go. So if he doesn't eat supper, he may actually let all that old grease just kind of wash out. Or another strategy is just not eating for 3 days. Don't you think that's a good plan if I have a grease fitting on a car, just cram it full of grease? It makes sense to me. I heard a man the other day saying you should never lubricate your firearms. Oil is the worst thing that you could do. And what I did was I watched a video of a guy just drenching a gun in motor oil. He's going, really? So you're telling me, you know, metallic surfaces don't need oil? Anyway, the gun functioned flawlessly. I thought it was interesting. But we just need to clean him out. He's just got too much back pressure in his liver and his gallbladder. And historically, when someone has that, they're not going to do well if they eat onion rings. Not going to. He's probably listening right now and says, Mom, I've been telling you I should be eating salads and avocados every day, and you just won't let me. But, see, that's one strategy right there. Another strategy is just taking... do you know what the word solvent means as it relates to my husband's got dirt all over his pants, I need to add some solvent to the wash? Okay, yeah, but you're just trying to help loosen the dirt and the debris. Sometimes lemon juice and lime juice works like a champ.
Okay.
So if you were to go to the store today and in the produce department it says lemons, 3 for $1, buy them. Or
yes,
in my case, limes, 5 for $1. That's what my plan is. If I told you that's on my list right now, as soon as I get off the air, I'm going straight to the store and I'm buying 5 limes for $1, would you believe me? I am. And the last time I checked, they only have about 2,000, you know, on display, so I don't think I have to worry about supply and demand. Mm-hmm. But lemon juice and lime juice, they do act as a solvent to help dissolve a lot of that gunk and debris. You know what the other strategy is? The other strategy is... someone that has diabetes, they're going to say, hey, this is not that big of a deal. I'm just going to take more insulin. Well, all you're doing is just cramming more fat and more gunk in the liver. It'll never work right. Never. There's no chance of recovery. Mm-hmm. So if your son says, Mom, Dr. Morgan's a genius, I'm not going to eat for the next 3 days. I'm not asking him if he wants to do that, because if you had your choice of having fresh hot popcorn with butter all over it, you're going to say, how can I resist? That's just too good.
So would lowering carbohydrates do also?
Yes, because carbohydrates, everybody has a threshold on what their body can tolerate. Would you agree?
I agree.
And so it's very easy to exceed the amount of carbohydrates that we truly need. I was reading an article this morning about treating people that have chronic infections, and the idea was, number one, eat real food that God has made. And I said, hey, I agree with that. And point number two was to eat less of it. I thought, oh my goodness, that could probably solve like all of the diseases that we have in the world if you just eat less. But yeah, it's pretty obvious that the average American consumes more carbs than what they should. And if you reduce that, then you're really limiting the amount of inflammation that's going to be teeming through his body. Mm-hmm. I know he's got to be miserable.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. If this was me and I woke up at 12 o'clock midnight with burning and acid coming up in my throat, oh, I already know how to do that to myself. Can I tell you how to do that to myself?
Yeah.
I should have like 3 helpings of lasagna at a church social meeting at about 10 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
That would do it for me. But if I had a salad for supper... Actually, I should back up and say it this way. One day this week, my wife baked zucchini in the oven. I never have any trouble with zucchini, or asparagus, or avocados, or salad. Or if you want to make a cucumber salad, that's never a problem. But if you try heavily, heavily concentrating tomato paste with Italian sausage and lasagna or spaghetti, you're just asking for a tremendous... And, of course, the lasagna is heavy, heavy carbs.
Right.
Anyway, does this sort of make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. I'll tell him today.
Good. Have you ever heard of herbal bitters?
No.
Well, you can go to the health food store and you can buy what are called bitters. B-I-T-T-E-R-S.
Mm-hmm.
If he took a little bit of bitters with every meal, he may tell me he's 80% better within 2 days.
Okay.
And then you can look like a genius. He's going to say, Mom, I have already been to 5 doctors. The only thing they can give me is omeprazole and Nexium and Tagamet. And we already know that, Mother, those have horrible, horrific side effects. Your son's probably come to you and said, Mother, did you know that you get more cancer of the gastrointestinal tract when you take omeprazole? And you're going to say, wow, does that mean you're motivated to get off of it? Why, Mother, yes. You're a genius, Mother, telling me about bitters and lemon juice and lime juice and reducing the intake of carbohydrates. Thank you, Mother. You're the best. Here's your pop quiz for the day. What has been voted the most beautiful name or word in the English language? What's the most beautiful word? It's Mother.
Mother.
You're right. How'd you know that? Now I have to ask you a personal question. You may not answer it, but I'm gonna. What is the word or term that's used for mother that your kids call you? What do they call you? They call you mother or mama or mom or what?
Mom.
Are you a grandmother?
Yes.
What do they call you?
Mama Kate.
Well, who's the one that came up with that? The littlest one? Or the oldest grandchild?
The children.
So you had no say in the matter, right?
No.
Mama Kate. I like that. Do they call you MK for short? No, I'm joking. Well, good. If you'll have run those by your son, and we'll see an improvement.
Okay.
Because if you, you're welcome. It's to me, and I know this is being a little bit negative, and I don't mean to be, but the plan of using acid-blocking drugs for 20 years, we're going to have a whole bunch of people with cancer down the road. And I realize every medical doctor is going to call me immediately, as soon as I get off the air right now with you. They're going to call in and they're going to argue that case, and then I'm going to have to do what I normally do. I'm going to have to go back to the research, and I'm just going to have to read all the articles on the air next week that say that.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for your phone call, and
give my
best to your young man there.
I will. Thank you so
yes,
much
ma'am.
For all you
you're
do.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. That was very sweet of you. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If nobody calls, I'm going to share some simple information with you. But if somebody calls, I'll make the phone calls the top priority. Yeah, here we go. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. I called last week and was right there at the sign-off, and you said we might continue the discussion a little further about different natural protocols for cancer, and sometimes the one thing seems to contradict the other.
They really don't, though. That doesn't exist. One doesn't contradict the other ever.
Well, let me ask you about this. One diet or the Kelly thing nearly always involved like four big glasses of
yeah, but can I tell you his story? Have you read his story?
It's been a while, but
well, can I give the shortened, abbreviated version of it?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to pretend I'm Dr. Kelly's mother. Son, you know better. You're on a junk food diet. You're a doctor. You're supposed to know better. But all you're doing is eating junk food all day long. There's no nutrients in junk food, son. What do you think you're doing eating Doritos and Cheetos and cheese puffs all day long? Twinkies and donuts, son, come on. When are you going to get serious? And that's how the conversation went down. And you know what he said? Mom, you're right. I've been eating food devoid of nutrients, and thank you, Mother, for being honest with me. Don't you think that there's sometimes that a mother is more honest than your buddies? Yeah, moms are usually very, very honest. They'll tell you things that nobody else will. Mm-hmm. But that's how that went down. So if he'd had the first part of his life, a life that was devoid of nutrients, it's not contrary from one to the other. It's just that he was devoid of nutrients. Doesn't it make sense if you want your immune system to work right that you might have to start flooding your body with nutrients? And so if that comes from vegetable juice, that is fine by me.
Yeah. Well, what I was wondering about, this is what Dr. Gonzalez was saying about ketogenic, is that if the ketogenic diet was, you know, like the ideal diet for everybody for cancer, then Dr. Kelly's regimen and Dr. Gonzalez's regimen of giving them four big glasses of fresh carrot juice every day should have killed them quickly, but these people were...
That's not even close to reality. That's just a narrative that Dr. Gonzalez is kind of making up. And why wouldn't he? If he's going to recommend lots of carrot juice to people, why wouldn't he want a narrative that espouses that? But it's not as black and white as the way that you're describing. It's just not that way at all. But yes, it is true. There are some people, they are so deficient in nutrients. That's one of the things you've got to focus on.
Okay.
Would you agree with me on something? How are we going to get cells? Let's just say it's a pancreas cell or a kidney cell. How are they going to work without nutrients?
Mm-hmm.
They're not, are they?
No.
And so there are times that that's what you have to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of a ketogenic diet, I'm not trying to... Here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to make any one thing a panacea. It's probably going to be a combination of them. And, of course, if we softened our approach, you might say, all right, what can we do to get the very best results? So for some people, yes, you have to give them massive amounts of vitamin C because they've been so deficient for so long. There's just a lot of repairs that haven't been made. I mean, we could do this with everything that you could think of. You could say, what about the role of vitamin D? What about the role of iodine? What about the role of zinc? What about the role of selenium? And I could build an individual case for each and every one of them, but what I'm probably after is more of a synergistic effect. But what I want you to describe to me is, what is the thing that you're wrestling with the most, and what's your angle on this, and what are you trying to achieve? What would make you happier than anything else if you knew what?
I'm not sure how to answer that.
Well, why did you call them?
First of all, not something personally for me, but in general, anytime anybody's suddenly diagnosed with cancer, which has been family members, friends, etc., there's this inevitable conflict of all different kinds of ideas that come up. And right now, I have a friend who is diagnosed with cancer, and the question is ketogenic kind of the answer to...
Well, you're, I can kind of see where you're coming from, but let me be a little bit more specific. And this is only one example.
Okay.
There is a very common form of skin cancer. I'll just say, actually, there's two that are probably relatively common. I've seen a bunch of them. One is called a squamous cell carcinoma, and the other is called a basal cell carcinoma. But they are skin cancers. And if you want to look up some horrific pictures on the internet of what bad cases look like, you can find them. But the whole key is, the moment you see something growing on your skin that does not belong there is the moment you should probably go to a doctor, like a dermatologist, and you should find out about that. So if they do a biopsy of the tissue and they find it's a squamous cell carcinoma, they can start recommending treatment. So you and I would agree that there's great value, and if you can strike while the iron's hot, the chances of having a better outcome are much better. So there's all sorts of treatments that are recommended, but there's one treatment that's natural that's been shown to have a 100% cure rate. It's an eggplant extract called Curaderm. And so for that person, I don't know if it's really a question of a ketogenic diet or a high juicing diet or a coffee enema diet or doing colonics or doing massive amounts of Laetrile. Each substance has its pros and cons. And really, what you're doing is, with this friend of yours, this developed cancer, it would be very helpful if we knew specifically where it's occurred.
Yeah, well, this is rectal.
Okay, well, that makes it even easier for me, because back in the 1990s, they tried using butyric acid on people with rectal cancer, and they had high success, but people wouldn't do it because it required massive amounts of butyric acid. So that's what beneficial microbes produce in your gut. So I would probably be a little bit bold and say chronic inflammation of the gut is going to lead to like a colorectal cancer. And so I think it would be wise to look into a ketogenic diet. I do, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to starve those cancer cells of their primary source of fuel. But just like I said earlier, to start the program off, if they have extremely low levels of colorectal cancer on the island of Okinawa, Japan, and this is not meant to be a panacea, but if they're consuming about 12 milligrams of iodine, well, if we go backwards and say, okay, what does every white blood cell carry around with them? Well, your average white blood cell, and that's your active living immune system, it carries about 40 times the amount of iodine of any other cells in the body. I think that's kind of a significant idea. Because iodine, just like if you and I put a tablet of iodine in dirty, toxic water, that would sterilize it where you and I could drink it and we could live and not die of thirst. And so these immune cells, they need iodine to defeat cancer cells. And so if they have very low cancer rates on the island and they also currently consume about 12 milligrams of iodine a day, yeah, I'm kind of making cause-effect. I know I'm oversimplifying it greatly. So there's a lot of connections here, but you don't get rectal cancer unless there's chronic inflammation in the colon. That's why we want to have a thick, luxurious coating of beneficial microbes.
Okay. What was that name of that eggplant extract?
It's called Curaderm. I think it's Curaderm. And all you do is you apply it to the cancer, and it will literally eat and dissolve the cancer and remove it down to its tentacles and its core. And after you're through, brand new, beautiful, pink, luscious skin, or if you're dark skin, maybe tan or black skin, will fill in where the cancer was. Look it up for yourself. Tell me what you think.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I can tell you're very, very analytical. And you like the idea of having precision. I like that also. But when it comes to the human body, it's not quite so easy because you have a lot of different factors. And let me present this to you, the gentleman that just called. Would you believe me if I told you that having tonsils and adenoids removed early in life predisposes a person later on in life to having colon cancer? Okay. Look up the information and see what the stats say. Would you believe me if I told you that the number of antibiotics that you have in your lifetime is going to, in turn, predispose you to a greater occurrence of cancer? So I'm going to say cause and effect. So the more antibiotics that a person has in their lifetime, the greater the occurrence of cancer over a lifetime. Can you buy into that? And you know, let's just not overthink this. Let's just discuss it just very, very simply. If you're born with this thick, luxurious, or soon after you're born, it starts to form. But when if you're 6 years old and you've never had any need for antibiotics, and all of a sudden you... Well, actually, that's not a good story. But let's say it in reverse. If you know of someone that said, I've had 65 rounds of antibiotics, well, what you're doing is you're killing the beneficial microbes, and that's one of the things that protects you from cancer. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Yes, on there a while ago for COPD sufferers,
mm-hmm.
Was that potassium iodide or potassium iodide?
Potassium iodide.
Iodide.
Yeah, that's what Dr. Okay. Jonathan Wright okay. wrote about. But what? Just any natural form of iodine is probably going to work.
Okay.
I shouldn't tell this on the radio, but I actually like eating those little bitty sheets of seaweed that I get from the health food store.
Okay. All right. I didn't get which it was, if it was iodide or iodine.
Well, both of them are still natural. So even a lot of the supplements that I use, one is a blend of iodide with iodine. They're just not man-synthetically altered chemical forms of iodine, like you might get it at the hospital for an injection or something.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, all right.
All right, thank you,
sir. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Ooh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I know one thing. If you are prone to chronic infections, guess what you might see? You might see fewer infections if you actually start consuming a little bit of iodine. You could probably build a case, if you wanted to, that kelp might end up being a super, super food. You know, I've been to Galveston before. It has never crossed my mind to eat green stuff floating in the Gulf. No, but I just hadn't had that thought. I mean, I'm sure you'd like to go eat some of that today, but I just... Oh, it's been a long time since I've been to Galveston, but when I was in school in the Houston or Pasadena area for college, oh my word, you could walk on the beach. It was hard to avoid those round or chunks of tar that come from oil spills. I did go one time where the water was clear. I know you don't believe me, but I'm telling you it was relatively clear. It wasn't clear like Gulf Shores, Alabama was clear, or Orange Beach, or Perdido Key, or Destin, or Pensacola. Now that's clear. Talk about beautiful water. Let me see if I can drift off into fantasy mode right now. Oh, yes, turquoise beaches. I'm driving over the causeway. Oh, yeah, that just makes me feel good. White sand. And it's hot outside. Of course, it's always windy. Always. The wind always blows. Wouldn't that make you feel good? You know, one of the things that comes from the coast are negative ions. They're happy hormones. They make you feel good. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Doctor. I hope my question is relative to what you've been speaking about with the other people who called, but I have been taking. I got a chiropractor one time told me to take seawater, 1 ounce of seawater a day, and yeah, I have been doing that, and it has been very helpful. And I didn't know if you could tell me what is in the seawater.
Minerals.
That, pardon?
Ionized minerals.
And so does that relate to what you've been suggesting?
Well, yeah, sure it does. I mean, every chemical process that's very advantageous and good for us, it requires minerals to make it happen.
Okay.
If you said, what does the thyroid need to work properly? Minerals. What does the pituitary and the hypothalamus need? Minerals. The adrenal glands, they're probably going to be pretty happy with seawater. Now, you know what I usually do to make it more simple and more palatable for people? I just tell them to use Celtic salt.
Celtic salt?
Yeah, or if you want to say Celtic salt.
I like Celtic salt. We use it.
Well, and that's what you're getting. You can make your own seawater.
Okay.
If you
want. And when I tell people about this, they look at me like I'm crazy, and they say,
"No one's ever done that to me before, ever."
and they say, "How can you drink anything out of the Gulf with all the oil spills and all the yuck?" But I just simply filter it through, cotton or a coffee filter, and get out any sand and stuff, and then I have this little jigger dispenser that I put it in, and I put it in the fridge. And an ounce a day is so easy to take it when it's really cold. It tastes so much better, icy cold.
Well, where do you live?
In Palestine.
As in near the Jewish Holy Land, Palestine?
No, this
Palestine,
<That's>
Texas.
Palestine.
Oh, little mispronunciation.
Yes. No, but we go to the Gulf periodically,
gotcha.
And Corpus or Galveston, and so
that's where you get it then, right?
Yes, I got a big 5-gallon clean jug that you take with you when you travel a long way to put in your radiator. Back in the day.
You know, my wife's Aunt New, she used to come from Pensacola, Florida up to Hot Springs, Arkansas every year because those mineral waters are known to be very healing, and she always suffered from rheumatism or arthritis, and it was a complete
mm-hmm.
cure for her. So, I mean, water's got to be one of the greatest healers of all time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking you're on to something here. You're a genius.
Well, I know.
I could tell by listening to you.
Well, I don't think my grandchildren or my children would say I'm a genius, but
well, who cares about them? They're so weak and infirmed right now they can barely get out of bed, right?
You've probably
been up and going for the last 3 hours, accomplishing all sorts of good stuff.
Well, I have. I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm cutting out some stamps for my collection, and then next time I'm going to crochet or
really.
Or,
what is your favorite stamp that you have in your collection right now?
Oh, well, I'm still cutting out and...
Can I ask you a personal question? Do you have a stamp with Moses' face on it?
No, I don't.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I didn't either. Do you have one with Adam or Eve's face on it?
No.
How about Methuselah?
No.
So what would be the oldest person that you have an image of their face or their silhouette on the stamp? Besides George Washington.
The Madonna and Child.
You don't mean Madonna the rock star, do you?
No, Madonna
okay,
Mary.
Good.
My dear Mary.
Mm-hmm.
The mother.
Well, wasn't she? She's got to be the greatest woman of all time.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you'll not get me to argue with you. Of course, you know what? These are any time that you find the story of a person that inspires you, where you want to try to imitate their good qualities, isn't that good?
Isn't it? Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything from the modern Madonna that we could imitate. I don't think so.
Oh no! Oh goodness! And I was so internally, I guess spiritually upset when I heard her for the first time taking that name, and to me that's like scandal or
that's like a slap to the face, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think so, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes, that would not I have a hard time believing it's going to go just real well one day, but I'm not in charge.
I know, and that's what knowing that justice will prevail thanks to Jesus is like the only thing that keeps you going sometimes.
You know what verse I read in the Bible this morning?
What was that?
It was the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians saying, three times I asked this thorn in the flesh be removed, and what did the
yeah.
Lord say to him?
Yeah.
My grace is sufficient. And I thought to myself, Oh boy, Roy, don't even try to contend. Just do it. Just accept it.
I wonder if they drank seawater.
Well, yes, in fact he did. He just discussed that in the previous paragraph. He was shipwrecked for 2 weeks straight where they had no food or water.
Yeah.
Have you ever read that story about Paul in the book of Acts? It may be 26 or 27.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he told the Roman centurion, I think his name was it Jairus? I mean, that don't hold me to that, but anyway.
No, I don't.
But the Roman
either.
Centurion, he told him, he said, "Do not set out. This trip is not going to go well. The Lord told me." And of course, what do? They set out and they encountered the worst seas of all time, and they threw the tackle overboard and their cargo. And but you know what they had down in the hold? Wheat. This huge ship. I think there were 270. I don't remember, was it 68 or 78 people, their souls, and these Romans, they were going to put everybody to death, all the prisoners, and Paul. But I mean, it said after 3 days on these torturous seas, they had given up all hope of being saved, and they didn't have any food for 2 weeks. So I'm guessing Paul had a lot of seawater. He did the This is Palestine protocol.
They didn't know. I guess they threw the wheat overboard because they threw everything overboard. And
can I tell you something just a little bit nutty?
What's that?
Well, it may not be nutty, not to you.
Well, see, everybody thinks I'm nutty, but anyway, go ahead.
You know what? I knew there was a reason why you and I got along so well. Birds of a feather. But anyway,
yes, flock together.
I was reading that there was a study done back in the 80s, and for some reason I want to say 81 or 83, but that doesn't matter. But they took people that had, I'm not trying to be offensive. They were older Americans. I'll just leave it there.
Oh, and what such as I.
Yes, such as I also. But what they did was they gave them a test. Yeah. They wanted to find out from reading information if they could come back and take a little pop quiz and how much of it they could either comprehend and, you know, regurgitate, remember, and recall, all that good stuff, which would be a measure of how well the brain's working. And then they gave them a little bit of a substance that's found in seawater.
Mm-hmm.
So did you know that there's just a smidgen of gold?
Yes, I did.
How'd you know that?
Well, I heard that the seawater has the same chemical composition as the amniotic fluid, but I don't know if there's gold in the amniotic fluid, but I did hear that there's gold in the seawater.
Yeah, you're right. But in the study, what they did was they gave about the same amount of liquid gold, I should say colloidal gold, as the amount that you'd find in seawater, and every single time it showed that it improved brain function. But this test was trying to measure intelligence quotient, or IQ. And because there's probably more studies that I haven't read, but I found that so fascinating that a little bit of gold in water in a colloidal suspension could actually improve your intelligence. And since then, I've been taking gold every day because I need it.
Oh, man, my family's going to pour it down my throat.
Now, let me ask you some serious questions. How old are you, if you don't mind?
I'm 69 going on 70.
Do you have a plan or hope for the future?
Heaven and standing before Jesus. I can't wait.
Well, you're going to do something else before Jesus. You're going to bow.
But
you'll gladly do that, won't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to hug him so tight.
You know, you could be like that woman that they said was a sinner that poured the expensive...
Perfume.
Mm-hmm. And then didn't it say she did not cease to kiss his feet and wash his feet with tears in her hair? That's just incredible.
Isn't it wonderful? Oh, gosh.
Well, I tell you what, there's a time and a place for definitely humbling yourself before the Lord. Doesn't the Bible say that God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble?
Yes. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and He will lift you up.
Oh, you know that verse in 1 Peter 5. Oh,
I do.
See there, you have great intelligence.
Oh, well.
Some of it could be from the seawater.
Periodically it comes to the surface.
Well, if there's something that should come to the surface, that's what has value. So way to go.
You have completely made my day a day. I'm a happy person because of you.
Well, thank you. And I really love your show, and you
go
for it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, God bless you.
God bless you. Bye-bye. You know, that may be kind of comical, but sometimes it's just as simple as giving your body the very thing it needs. So, yeah, isn't that interesting? The first 9 months before, while we're growing in the womb, we're being bathed in this fluid that's identical to the ocean's water. Isn't that interesting? That's just a coincidence, though, right? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing wonderful. I have a question regarding the coconut oil and my dog and my cat. They seem to love it. I give them a little bit every day. Is that bad for the animals, or
no.
What is your...
Are you kidding? No, that's perfect for them.
Okay.
How do you give
okay.
it to them?
It's in the...
Do they just lick it off your legs after you rub it in? I mean...
No.
I didn't think so.
It's not the liquid oil, you know, it's the...
yeah, it's the real thing.
The other, and it's... What it is, I go over there and get the little container out, and I pop the top, and then the dog runs over there to me when she hears that noise, and she just, like, begging for it.
Give it to her. What kind of dog is she?
Dobie mix.
Are you serious? How much does she weigh?
Oh, I don't know, about maybe 35.
Oh, there's absolutely nothing you can do to harm that animal. They need fat.
Okay, great.
Did you ever hear about that experiment on YouTube where the kid had the science experiment and she put a stick of butter on a saucer at the end of a log out in the woods and a stick of margarine on the other? There were no animals that ever even touched the margarine. Now, a buzzard may have thrown up on top of it. I never caught that part of it. But the butter, every animal in the forest wanted it because it has value, and animals are the same way.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and hang up if you want to expand on that, if you have any time.
You betcha. Thank you very much, ma'am.
We appreciate your program. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye. I didn't do a good job this morning giving out the phone number. The phone number is 903-586-5257. You may want that for future reference for next week, because I only have like maybe 1 minute, so that's just not enough time. But yes, every pet owner, blessed is the man or the woman that takes care of their animals. You would be better off by giving them a little bit of coconut oil every single day. And you might have to trick them at first. Maybe just pour it over their dog food. If I ever pour grease from meat on the cat's or the dog's food, they love it. It's not going to clog their arteries. That's just utterly ridiculous. Anyway, what do you think coconut oil could do for a human being that actually has has great intelligence? It can do a lot. I bet you anything, crabs. Have you ever heard of those coconut crabs? With those claws so powerful they can just rip a coconut open. Well, friends, they're eating the coconut meat, but they're probably really after the oil. That's just my guess. I'm just guessing. Every one of us would be better off if we had coconut oil. See, that's what I would love to see. I'd love to see a study showing you give mice coconut oil as part of their diet, and they're not going to do that, folks, because that's not the narrative they want. They want corn oil, which is pure garbage, or canola oil. I have had pleasure being with you today. Tune in next week.